So we're starting at zero. You don't know the alphabet yet. You don't know anything about Hebrew, biblical Hebrew grammar. And I'm going to walk you through really slowly and methodically with the attempting to make it comprehensible at every step, right? So that you feel like you're understanding what's going on the whole time and you're getting all this input in Hebrew at your almost zero level, you know, and then we're growing slowly.
Hi, Beth.
Hello.
And well, welcome to the podcast. First of all, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks very much for inviting me. It's good to be here.
And well, yeah, as usual, just tell us a little bit about your story, especially when it comes to languages, your experience learning languages early on, and yeah, anything that you think is relevant that comes to mind.
Sure, yeah, I'll try to summarize. It's been a long journey. I started when I was maybe in middle school to become really fascinated with languages. And I think that it mainly started because I was really interested in the Lord of the Rings books. And
Right.
he has Elvish languages that Tolkien invented for that. So I got really fascinated with those. And then I realized, like, hey, here I am, a 13-year-old who's really enjoying studying the grammar of some made-up language. I'm like, maybe there's something here. Maybe I should pursue this language stuff. So in high school, I studied a lot of things, specifically Spanish and Latin, like in classes that I had. But then on my own time, I also was looking into Arabic, learning the alphabet for Arabic, learning the Korean alphabet, studying a little bit of Greek and ancient languages. I was really interested in Egyptian hieroglyphs, and my grandma gave me a book on Egyptian hieroglyphs, so I went through that book, and I don't even remember what other languages caught my attention, but I kind of just picked and choose a little bit of a lot of different things just for fun, because I was a nerd and I was enjoying learning about all the different kinds of languages out there. So I decided to study linguistics because of that interest. And so in college, I went to school in Southeast Michigan, where I'm from, and studied linguistics in college, and also went to in North Dakota, there's a program with the Summer Institute of Linguistics, and they have a summer program there, or they had, it's no longer running. But at the time, I would go every summer. So I would study, you know, in Michigan during the school year. And then in the summers, I went there and got it sort of a different side of linguistics because they teach a little bit more the tools to analyze minority languages that may not have the grammar written up anywhere. And so I learned a lot of really valuable stuff there about how to analyze languages that maybe aren't well known, and also how to learn a language that doesn't have all that information already available for you. So that was a big stepping stone, I guess, for me getting into the ideas of second language acquisition. There was a second language acquisition course that they offer there in the first year. And that was the growing participator approach methodology. I don't know if you've heard of that, but it's designed for people who are heading into a region where there's a minority language spoken and they want to learn it, but there's no books, there's no classes. How do you acquire this language? And so it teaches you how to basically be the director. You hire somebody to be your teacher, and then you have like sessions with them, but you come with all the questions and you do it through activities. So as a student, it's student directed. You come and you say, how do you say this and that, and please show me how to do this in your language. And then you have the person who's your teacher is sort of helping you access their world and their language. So I learned that approach, which ended up serving me really well and still affects a lot the work that I do today. And I guess another thing in college, I became totally fascinated with Japanese. And so I studied abroad my third year of university. I went to Japan. And that was really my first experience becoming somewhat fluent in a foreign language. Up to then, it had all been head knowledge, book work, grammar, translation of Latin, you know, rules and that kind of thing. Right. But I'd never been in an environment where I was hearing the language all the time, experiencing what it's like to try to pick up what you can from what you hear, try to express yourself. And I was really gratified that I had a decent amount of success with the short time that I was there. And I felt like it was really empowering. Wow, I can learn a language. This is possible for me. You know, there's always a little bit of that doubt when you've never done it before. Like, how does this work? Will I really be able to do it? So I was very encouraged by the fact that Japanese is so distant from English. I like to joke, it's kind of like the opposite of English. Like if there's any way that it could be opposite, it is probably opposite. And as far as word order and things like that goes, so really enjoyed my time there and learned a lot. Unfortunately, I've lost a lot of that fluency, almost all that fluency since then, because I haven't been using Japanese. But that also kind of sparked that love of, or that empowerment, like, I can do this. So after college, I moved to Colombia.
Wow.
And that's when my Spanish language journey started. And when I got there, I had, you know, what you would learn in high school Spanish, but never use it, never interact with Spanish speakers. So I could understand some things. I could express a few basic things, but I was really frustrated. I also arrived to...
Like the story on like IT Spanish. So all my American students have the same background. I took Spanish in high school, but
but that doesn't mean much, right?
Yes, right.
Well, I had taken one semester in college too, which ended up being really helpful because the professor there really drilled us on irregular verbs in a really helpful way, and so I had all that knowledge in me, but I just hadn't activated, you know, actually using it. Mm-hmm. And of course, I need a lot more vocabulary. So I would say it took me about a year and a half of living in Colombia to become comfortable with Spanish. And that was with a really high degree of immersion. I was not married at the time, so I was single and I was there working with a church and surrounded by Spanish a lot. But I was a bit slow to put myself out there. So I slowed down my learning curve a little bit because of that. But the other factor, when I first arrived to Colombia, I arrived to a region that has a very strong coastal accent.
Okay.
And so it was really hard for me to understand the people. The really sweet people would come up and try to talk to me, and I would just be like, I have no idea what you're saying. It was so discouraging because I thought, you know, I thought I knew some Spanish, you know, at least some. And then the most basic things, I would be like totally lost. So jumping into a region with a particularly strong accent can also be a big challenge.
Yeah.
So yeah, since then, I guess after already becoming quite comfortable in Spanish, I began to be more familiar with the ideas of Stephen Krashen and comprehensible input. And I was able to recognize how my success in Spanish was due in large part to a lot of those ideas. I just didn't know that they were at work in my process, but they were. And I was able, so it really resonated with me when I started to study it more. I was like, oh, that makes sense. That's why it worked for me. That's why I became really fluent and really comfortable, because I had comprehensible input coming in all the time.
Exactly.
Because I wasn't analyzing the grammar in my head every time I was trying to speak, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to compare that with, say, my Latin class and realize, like, okay, that was a very different experience, you know. So it really made sense to me. And I've really become a believer in the comprehensible input approach to language learning. And since then, I haven't really been studying languages, additional languages, with a lot of intentionality. But I have been sort of methodically listening to a lot of Portuguese just to see. I don't really speak it. If I try to speak it, it sounds like Spanishified Portuguese, you know?
I
probably could get around if I needed to, you know, but my comprehension level is really high. I listen to a lot of podcasts and music and that kind of thing.
Right.
And so that's been really cool too, to see the process again. You know, I just continue to try to self-test, how is this comprehensible input methodology, you know, is it still working in my own experience? And I find that, yeah, just listening to input that's at a level, even if I can't access all of it, if I can understand enough to keep my attention, then I will be growing. So I've seen that work in Portuguese. I've kind of started the process in French. Yeah. So I've also been trying to do the same process where I just listen to a lot of input in order to build my comprehension in French. I don't know if I will ever need to speak French or Portuguese. I would love to visit Portuguese speaking countries someday, but I'm just curious. It's kind of a self experiment to see how far I can, how far I can take the learning process just by listening.
So you were talking about the fact that you don't know if you're ever going to use Portuguese or French, right? But you just enjoy the process of acquiring.
Exactly. I enjoy the process. I enjoy the gratification of comprehending something I didn't before. And it's kind of a personal experiment to see also, you know, if I kind of implement Krashen's ideas that that input is the most important, if I can build a high level of comprehension and then someday try to flip the switch to produce in that language, I'm curious to see how that goes if I have the opportunity.
Right. Oh, so. This is quite a journey overall, right? I have a ton of questions for you when it comes to the different experiences, the different languages. But yeah, to start with Japanese, because you said that was the first time you felt like you actually acquired the language, right? Because before that, it was all what I call the traditional grammar way, right? Like studying the language, consciously paying attention to form and so on. So when you first moved to Japan, what was your knowledge of language before going there?
I think I had two semesters, which is a lot less language knowledge than two semesters of Spanish because the difference is so wide and you spend so much time learning the katakana and hiragana that, so I could say basic things like it's cool, it's hot, you know, I'm hungry. And that was about it. I could say things were different colors, you know, but that was really about as far as I was. I intentionally spent a lot of time with Japanese friends and tried to avoid falling into the groups of international students that were speaking English all the time. And that helped a lot.
Right. Yeah. So you need to use some sentences that you memorize, right? And
pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. But there were a lot of really kind students around that university that were interested to talk to me and put up with my really low level of Japanese. And that was really what helped me, I think, is they were just very kind to be interested to communicate with me just because I was a foreigner, even if I wasn't particularly exciting to talk to as far as my language level. And that's what you really need, I think, for those early stages. You need some very patient, kind people who want to speak to you in their native language.
Right. And I guess they made the conscious effort to help you understand by speaking really slowly using gestures. I'm imagining with such a different language, you know, even the most simple things were not comprehensible, right?
There's probably so much I missed. I had no idea.
Right.
Yeah.
But, okay. Yeah. But let's say that little by little, you could understand some things that they were telling you.
I got to a point where I could understand, you know, a lot of the sort of normal everyday small talk sort of things, talking about school or church or the different areas that I was involved in. I could not understand the news at all, but as far as everyday sort of little communications on a sort of superficial level, I felt pretty comfortable with a little conversation like that.
And when it comes to the alphabet or the characters that you talked about, I'm guessing what you did in those two semesters was memorizing characters, right?
Sure. I mean, I was taking classes at the university too in Japanese, which were a little bit more traditional, although they tried to involve a lot of interaction in class and production. There was definitely a lot of just rote memorization involved in that process as well. But somehow, I guess the fact that I was still constantly trying to use it for communicative purposes, it really helped it not be just memorization, just rules. Like I was trying to apply it so instantly to my everyday life and conversations that it, I think that helped it kind of go into the acquisition part of my brain.
Right. So. Yeah, because that's our goal in the end, right? To be able to communicate in the language. You just anyway, and when it comes to the characters, what was your level of comprehension when you got to Japan? Would you understand the signs? Could you understand something? Did you improve?
Oh, very, very few. I definitely improved a lot from all the signs and all the input around me. Yeah. But I mean, I had basic, the most basic things, which can help you understand. Oh, there's the exit. There's the entrance. This way to the train station. You know, you can sort of start to recognize some things with the basics, but certainly a newspaper was utterly above my head. Yeah,
that's
real simple stuff.
Yeah, like I said, that's a topic that I'm really interested in, because in my personal experience, besides Russian, I haven't learned a language with a different alphabet. I mean, I'm in the process of learning it. I don't speak.
Okay.
But it's still, I mean, so it's a different alphabet, but it's still an alphabet. It's not character.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So the, you know, I've talked about it, that what helped me with it was I started watching videos on YouTube, like, you know, teachers who create content, specifically adapted to even complete beginners, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I started recognizing, because one of the channels that I watched had, in some of the videos, she talks about cultural videos and different types of things, but in one of them, she had the map of Europe with the names in Russian, in Cyrillic.
Okay.
So I could recognize, I was talking about the same example, but that's what I noticed was the first thing, right? The little sort of a ball with a stick, it was the first letter in France and in Finland. And
while
she was talking about the countries at the same time, I realized, okay, so that's our F sound, right? And that was little by little, I was able to acquire the alphabet without consciously learning it, if that makes sense. And now I can read in Russian. You know, if I read something that's complex, I don't understand what's in there. I don't understand the meaning, but I can read the words. That's so when it comes to languages with a different, I mean, not just a different alphabet, but characters like Chinese, Japanese, Arabic, and I'm sure you have a lot of things to say about that, but people keep talking about memorizing these characters or you know, and I haven't direct this personal experience with it, like I said, but I have the feeling that it can be acquired in a natural way as well. You know, like there's no need to...
Yeah, it's definitely...
Yeah. Consciously memorize or so on. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely different to apply, I think, some of the comprehensible input theories from the beginning with a language that it has a different script or is so different grammatically from your languages you already know. And that's something I'm really interested in seeing, because I think a lot of us who have experience with comprehensible input, a lot of us kind of tend to stick within maybe the Romance languages, and there's so much crossover that we can really easily access intermediate level stuff in those new languages. For example, for me, for French or Italian, you know, it's not that hard. I can start to work out what things mean, and there it's input that is interesting. You know, it's not like ground level zero.
Right.
But that's really different if you're saying like, I want to start learning Chinese comprehensible input style. Where do I start? You know, any input I find in Chinese is just so far above me. I'm not going to be able to access any meaning, and that's not really going to be fulfilling the requirements of comprehensible input. And so actually a part of what I haven't mentioned yet is our channel teaching Biblical Hebrew. And that is sort of what I'm trying to implement with those lessons. So we're teaching via video, and the idea is to teach with the idea of comprehensible input, sort of mixed with the growing participator approach that I mentioned earlier that I had learned, but to do it in a very methodical way. So we're starting at zero. You don't know the alphabet yet. You don't know anything about Hebrew, biblical Hebrew grammar. And I'm going to walk you through really slowly and methodically with the attempting to make it comprehensible at every step, right? So that you feel like you're understanding what's going on the whole time and you're getting all this input in Hebrew at your almost zero level, you know, and then we're growing slowly. And that's something I would love to see people do more with modern languages, because I think there's a lot of gap at the very beginning stages, you know, of learning a language. Once you get to an intermediate stage, you can access all kinds of cool stuff on the internet and YouTube channel videos or whatever, and you can start to grow. But getting to that intermediate stage in a language that is super different than any language you already speak is really difficult. And there's really no good way to do that. You kind of have to start with a textbook or something. Practically speaking, unless you can hire a language teacher or something like that. But finding that comprehensible input at level zero, level one, level two, super beginning levels is really difficult. And something I would love to see more of on in the world of YouTube and comprehensible input, because I see a lot of people doing comprehensible input channels, and that's really great, but they tend to be really topical. So now we're going to study seasons, and now we're going to study colors, you know, and each video has a different topic of vocabulary or something like that. But it's not all woven together in like a methodical order to guide you from zero to a certain goal. Mm-hmm. And that would be helpful for me. I would love to learn more Arabic, for example. And I would love to have someone take me from absolute zero through videos and walk me up. But instead, I find, you know, a lot of channels, they're just kind of topical, but they don't help me review. They don't help me internalize. They present, and that's great. It's better than nothing. But some kind of order and flow that would build on what you've seen before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would be really helpful, I think. So right. I don't know. I'd love to see people trying that out a little bit more with other languages, especially modern languages and ancient languages.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. It's I was thinking just that I've actually looked at a couple of your videos, like the first ones. And first of all, great job, because it's comprehensible, like I said. But I saw that you have that idea of in future lessons, you know, you sort of build on top of what you've covered in previous ones, right? Mm-hmm. So they're in a specific order that are going to help you learn a language even from scratch.
That's right.
Because with different languages, like we're talking about, you really need a second person, whether that's a teacher, an actual teacher, or someone to create a content for you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in that regard, I haven't started with it, but there's, I don't know if you can call it a method, but it's based on the same principles, but it's called ALG, which is automatic or automated language growth. To me, it's the same idea as comprehensible input related theories. But they believe that you don't need to understand everything.
Uh-huh.
So it's more about, you know, speaking about different topics in a natural way, right? But not paying as much attention on, you know, getting you to understand every single thing. They make it comprehensible, of course, so you understand what they're talking about. But they're not too worried about every single word. And I think that started in a language school in Thailand, and there's a channel called Comprehensible Thai, which I haven't started with it yet, but they have a ton, like tons and tons of videos and content. So that could be interesting, because that's
cool.
A different language, different character as well. And a couple of months ago, I also interviewed a British guy who lives in Turkey. who he went to test. It was a test because he actually used Tokipona, which is a conlang language, right? So it's not an actual language, a constructed language, right? So he started creating videos, like for 30 days, like 30 videos, which he talked in Tokipona in a simple way. He told stories and things like that, based on ALG as well, you know, so you didn't understand everything, but because of the pictures, the context and so on, you could understand what he was talking about, right? So there's that you can take a look at.
Yeah, I'll have to check those out. They're definitely maybe these things I haven't run across because I haven't really explored those particular languages. So that'd be cool. I'd love to see the Thai one, see what that looks like.
Yeah, because they upload videos every day. So it's there's so much content.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm learning Russian and German now, so I'll focus on those two for now. But one of the, you know, one of the things that I look at when learning a new language is how much content is available, right? And that's why I was thinking about the Thai thing. Obviously, I try to make it a little bit practical, you know, like, am I going to use it? Is it going to allow me to communicate to a lot more people in the native language, you know? Things like that.
Right.
It's not the only thing that I take into account, but, you know, it always helps if there's a lot of content. But definitely, the languages, you need some outside help. I'm really curious about your channel. Like, of course, we'll, like we were talking about off camera, let's say, we'll, I'll invite you to the live streaming one day. So it'll actually be in Spanish because you can perfectly communicate in Spanish. You actually live in a Spanish-speaking country, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So we'll talk more in depth about it, and we'll ask we'll answer everyone's questions when it comes to your journey, the languages you've been learning, and your experience, and so on. But I'm really curious about. Well, there's several questions, but. When you started with your project of teaching Biblical Hebrew, and what do you want to accomplish? Well, and first of all, how did you learn that, the language?
Yeah. So as far as learning it, I had the opportunity to study at a specialized program in Jerusalem, which is to teach Biblical Hebrew. Specifically, it's designed for Bible translators and those who are going to be working to translate the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible, as some call it, into minority languages. They also kindly accepted me, who was not at the time directly involved in Bible translation. And they teach through a more communicative method, which is really quite unique. There are a handful of programs that I know of that teach Biblical Hebrew with a more communicative comprehensible input related methodology. And so I benefited a lot from that. I did some of the intensive grammar studies from a textbook, you know, to prepare for that time. But then that time that I was in Jerusalem, about 5 months, I was able to really internalize it better, learn how to use it a little bit more communicatively. And so that was so beneficial for me, and I love teaching. My husband and I said, well, let's make this available more widely, because it's, especially people from Latin America, it's really hard for them to get that kind of training. It's so rare to find someone who's teaching the language in that style. You really have to spend thousands of dollars and get a visa to Israel and get accepted to one of these programs. I mean, that's really the only way I know of to do it. You say you're someone from Mexico who wants to learn. And that's just not that in reach for most people out there. Or maybe, even if they had the money, they can't leave their family or something like that. And so our vision is to bring that kind of training, that style of teaching Biblical Hebrew to everyone. So that it doesn't have to depend on your level of money or free time or flexibility, you know. And so, because we just really believe that everyone should have access to a language. It's a sacred book for so many people. We want to see everyone have access to read it in the original language, who wants to, and not to have that be so locked up for, you know, this, it's just really expensive. It's really expensive to learn biblical Hebrew in a lot of places.
Wow.
And so YouTube is a really cool way that we can take advantage, a platform we can take advantage of to get this knowledge out there. And that's kind of where our idea, the project started. We weren't really sure the pathway that it was going to take, but we got started at ground zero. And we are now 105, 104 lessons in, about to publish lesson 105 this week. And so it's been really, really fun. It's connected us with people all around the world who are excited to learn biblical Hebrew. And we've taken everyone, you know, if you followed our videos in order, from knowing absolutely zero Hebrew, then you slowly learned the alphabet. So kind of like you were saying, you acquired the Russian alphabet. I kind of slowly start to integrate the alphabet so that you learn the sounds and the letters, not all at once. Like you have to, you know, here's a quiz on the letters tomorrow. You have to memorize them overnight.
Right.
But really slowly, you're just sort of building extra symbols little by little so that you kind of have a chance to assimilate that information better. And now we're at a point where we're able to read a lot of selected texts from the Hebrew Bible. I incorporate a lot of the Hebrew Bible into the videos. And so we still have a lot of grammar to cover. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. Like by we, you mean people who are watching the videos?
Exactly. If you've been following along, you know, our student body, essentially, who's caught up to us, they should be able to comprehend the verses that we've selected that are within their comprehension level. And so we're just slowly adding vocabulary, adding grammar as we go with each lesson a little bit more. But the goal is to make that transition nice and easy and fun and entertaining, because I'm a big believer that if you're not enjoying the process of language learning, you're just not going to be successful. Not going to persevere. And so it's got to be fun. It's got to be fun for you where you're at. And so that's a big part of our philosophy, too, is we try to incorporate a lot of humor into the lessons. Humor that's not going to be too dependent on any one culture, so everyone can kind of get in on the laugh. And the other big thing is it's all monolingual in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not depending on English. We don't want to cut anyone out. Like if they don't understand English, they can't learn biblical Hebrew. Yeah. The idea is that anyone from any language should be able to follow along. Of course, you can't communicate perfectly to every culture. Different things have different meanings, you know, so we do our best to be as intercultural as possible in the symbology that we use and things. I'm sure it's not perfect. I'm sure there are holes, but that's the goal, is to basically make it so that if you're a Spanish speaker, if you're a Thai speaker, if you're a Swahili speaker, as long as you have internet access to watch our videos, and even if you don't, you can download them. We've also got an option to download for offline viewing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's our goal, is to get the knowledge of biblical Hebrew out there for free to everyone who's interested, so that they're not hampered by boring textbooks or any financial issues. So
That's awesome. Yeah, of course, I'll leave all the links to your channel and everything in the description. But yeah, well, first of all, thank you for saying that about the fact that you think it has to be fun. That's I don't know how many times I've talked about it myself. I mean, to me, it's even in the short run, but in the long run, it is not going to happen if you're not enjoying the process. And we're talking languages here, but I pretty much believe it works for anything. By the way, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, but back to what you said, like I said, I've looked at a couple of your videos, and I saw the first one. So you use animals, like toys, and you talk about them. So yeah, like you said, you don't use English at all. It's just you use the words in the target language,
right.
And you have the object in this case, or it can be an image, or it can be a gesture to help people understand what you're talking about. Awesome.
That's right.
And have a couple more questions with that about that. Like, how similar is biblical Hebrew to I don't know if you call it actual Hebrew or modern Hebrew or what.
Modern Hebrew, yeah. Yeah, well, I don't actually speak modern Hebrew fluently, so I can only speak to a certain degree. I don't have a really vast knowledge of modern Hebrew. A lot of people, just because they're both called Hebrew, assume that they're basically the same.
Right.
But actually, there are a lot of grammatical differences, particularly when it comes to the verbal systems. There's a lot of older, you know, modern Hebrew speakers would hear biblical Hebrew and they would hear all these archaic sounding verb forms that they don't use anymore.
Right.
And yeah, there's just been a lot of simplification and regularization of some things. I think there's more use of suffixes on everything in the biblical Hebrew, and modern Hebrew has kind of pulled those out and made them to go with prepositions and made it a little bit more regularized.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there are significant differences. I think that a lot of modern Hebrew speakers will say that they have a high degree of comprehension when they hear the ancient Hebrew. But I also wonder how much of that, like, because the modern Hebrew words have taken on modern meanings often.
Yeah,
they may not be hearing everything as it was actually meant. They think they understand, they know that word, but it may have had a different nuance or even a rather different meaning in the past. So it's a little bit hard. I'm not sure, since my knowledge of modern Hebrew is a bit shallow, I can't speak to everything, but I would consider them, like, certainly they're super related, but I tend to treat them as different languages.
Sure.
If, like, what you're learning in our biblical Hebrew videos is really not going to help you that much to have a conversation with somebody in modern day Israel.
Right.
It might give you a few helpful things that help you learn the noun phrase structure and a few things, but the greetings, the way that they talk is all very different than what you find in the Hebrew text of the Bible. So
it's kind of the, maybe not, but I was thinking of ancient English. If you read Shakespeare plays, for example.
Yeah. It might be similar difference.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little, in some places, even a little more different. It's hard to say. It's hard to quantify.
Yeah,
but it's a similar experience where every modern person would pick up Shakespeare and be like, I don't know what that word is, or we wouldn't say it that way. So.
Right, because I guess when it comes to Hebrew, even more time has actually gone by, right? So it's even, like, it's farther away, like, one from the other, right? Because between Shakespeare and today's English, the span has been shorter than biblical Hebrew.
Right.
Like, the original Hebrew.
Yeah. And the fact that it was kind of preserved as a sacred language, that helped it not change as much as, say, English has as a spoken language all the time, because it was kind of preserved in a religious atmosphere for many centuries. I think that helped slow down the rate of change a bit. But then really for modern Hebrew, it was really intentionally reinstated. And a lot of people learned it as a second language in order to take part in the state of Israel. And so it has a very unique history. I don't know if you've read up on the history of modern Hebrew. It's very unique that they were able to revive a language that was not widely spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, once you revive a language and you pull it off of the page and you put it in people's mouths, it starts to change and you can't stop that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's also part of what we're seeing, is that even though they wanted certain ones of the founders, you know, of the modern Hebrew language, maybe wanted to keep it very purist according to what they found in the text, that just wasn't possible to enforce when it came down to the practicalities of it. And so, you know, it's taken on a life of its own now, and it will continue to evolve as a spoken modern language.
Right. And when it comes to the written part, are the symbols the same or what's?
Yeah. Yeah. The alphabet is the same.
Okay.
Just like Arabic, modern Hebrew speakers, they would not write the vowels typically, unless it's maybe a children's book or a religious text or something. So they would tend to typically only write the consonant letters. Whereas we're teaching biblical Hebrew, including all of the vowels, because if you buy a Hebrew Bible, that's what you're going to find. You're going to find all the vowels.
Sure. Wow. Yeah, so we definitely have to do the live streaming because there's so many questions. I mean, so many questions that I have in my mind. I'm sure so many questions that people are going to have. Especially there's one guy from Argentina who actually is learning Hebrew.
Okay.
Like modern one.
So mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I was asking this as well, because I don't know how much he can use it to his own journey, right?
Sure.
So
yeah, that might depend on where in his journey he's at. I think if you're at the very beginning, then our videos can definitely help you learn the alphabet and can definitely help you acquire some basic vocabulary and get a feel for how phrases are put together. But I'd say maybe once you get past lesson 50 or so, we're going to start diverging more and more from what you would need to communicate in Israel versus what you would need to read the Hebrew Bible.
Right. No, I think he can understand quite a bit. So probably past 50 lesson mark.
Yeah. Sure.
Cool. And when it comes to the alphabet, when you went to that program in Jerusalem, how did you learn the alphabet? Was it traditional as well? Or
yes. Yes, I had learned it. Actually, I had learned it a long time ago in all of my studies, you know, in high school, I had learned the alphabet, but hadn't really used it very much. But we were required to have a year of Hebrew in order to enter the program because they didn't want to have to start from 00 with their precious time. You know, they wanted to get people going at a more intermediate level. And so I did a lot of self-study in that process, including getting used to the alphabet. So
cool. And
yeah, but there's definitely a unique challenge as far as applying the comprehensible input methodology to ancient languages.
Right.
And because, you know, modern languages, you have podcasts and YouTube videos and movies and music and all this stuff. And then if you want to learn ancient language, you just don't have that body of input to draw on, especially not simplified. You know, it's extra hard to find more simplified input. So, you know, there's some great podcasts in French and Portuguese I've listened to that are simplified specifically for learners. But if all of your input is like Cicero or Homer, it's not very simplified.
Good luck. Right?
And yeah. So that's part of our goal too, is to just keep building this body of more simplified biblical Hebrew stories and videos and songs and stuff. So that people have more input, and it feels like there's a long way to go. We hope that more people will come along and join us and put more stuff out there of quality on YouTube. But it's definitely a different challenge. I think that's why so many people default with like ancient Greek, ancient Hebrew, Latin. You know, they kind of default to a more grammar model because the resources aren't there in the same way. Now, I know for Latin, there's been a lot more developed that people really love, a Lingua Latina series, and people rave about that. So there have been efforts for ancient languages to kind of get that ball rolling. But yeah, we'd like to see that more with biblical Hebrew because I think it's been a little bit lagging behind the Latin and Greek as far as popularity and good resources out there in the comprehensible model.
Yeah, because if you think of ancient languages, like Latin and Greek are the first two that come to mind. Yeah, that's true.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, plus I think those were actually, those may have been the two that started, how to put it into words. So I've read somewhere, or I've heard about it, that we started learning languages the traditional way because of Latin and Greek.
Possibly.
Because they were dead languages, right? Like they weren't used in real life. So people thought that, like you said, that there wasn't anybody to talk to. That, you know, there was not a country you could travel to and talk to people.
Right.
So that's what started the, I was going to say, the bad trend of learning languages the traditional way with grammar and so on.
Sure. But yeah, now we have a lot of
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure I don't know of any projects, but I'm sure there are people who sometime in the future are going to start creating videos in Elvish or Klingon or
sure very likely
what's the one
all the conlang that's out there
exactly or the what's the one spoken in Game of Thrones, like High Valyrian or things like that, right?
Okay.
Because
I think the tide is turning and people are gathering more and more interest in approaching language more from a comprehensible input point of view. And I see that gaining popularity as people experience it and experience success with it.
Exactly.
But it just takes a lot of time. You know, teachers learned a certain way and they're comfortable teaching a certain way. And you just kind of have to keep pushing and the next generations will will see new ways of doing things. They'll try new things out. And I think we'll see a slow shift, but definitely it's not something that can be changed from one day to the next.
Yeah, but that's the good thing about the internet is you have access to ideas from people from different countries.
That's right.
In a heartbeat, you know, in a moment.
That's right.
So, yeah, I see more and more comprehensive input projects by the minute. So that's
they're springing up all over the place. I almost can't keep up with them. And
right.
Be fun. I don't know if you know of any collection online of someone who's sort of collected links to all the different channels of all the languages that people are teaching with comprehensible. Do you know of a list like that, or do you have one yourself?
I do. I found a thread on Reddit, actually.
Oh, okay.
And funny enough, that's how I came across your channel.
Oh, really? Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, it's the sorted out by language.
Okay, cool.
Right? So
yeah. Oh, I'd love to see that. Be fun.
Yeah, I'll leave the link in the description as well, and I'll send it to you. But yeah, there's like a huge list of obviously there's more content for Spanish, French, language like that, right? But
well, that would be a great resource to have because people are always asking me, "Oh, do you know of any good resources for X language?" You know, that would be great to have that to point them to.
I'll leave that in the description box. Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, so well, like I said, Beth, first of all, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and you've got
my pleasure
quite a journey when it comes to language learning and different experiences, and
it's been fun,
super useful. And yeah, like I said, we have to set up live streaming in Spanish. So we can talk more about we can get more in detail about all the things that we've been talking about today.
Sure. Sounds fun. I look forward to it.
People's questions live, because I'm sure they're going to have a ton of them. And yeah, so thank you again.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was really great to talk to you. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. And everyone who's interested in learning Biblical Hebrew, you know, go to
welcome
Aleph with Beth, right?
Aleph with Aleph. Beth. Yeah. So my name is Bethany, but Beth is also like the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet, according to one pronunciation tradition. Right. And so it's kind of a little pun. Aleph is the first letter and Beth is the second letter. So Aleph with Beth.
Beth. Awesome. Nice, nice. But I'll leave the link, like I said. Okay. So yeah, I'll talk to you soon. And thank you so much. Have a great day.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed it. And here you can subscribe, because I want to help you understand that you too can learn any language when enjoying the process every step of the way. I'm convinced, really. And here you have another episode that I'm sure you're going to love, and the entire list of episodes so far, the entire list of interviews with teachers, polyglots, researchers, and many more.